Welcome to the midweek Mission Ridge podcast known as Footnotes. Footnotes is here to give you some of the stuff that we didn't have time to cover in the sermon and encourage you to dig in deeper as you study the text. So let's dive in and check out what's in the footnotes.
Welcome to another episode of Footnotes. This week on Footnotes, we got Paul Patterson burping into the microphone. That was attractive. My goodness. And slurping. He's just so good at this. And Rob Croyle.
I'm here too.
He's not doing any of that into the microphone because he's not an unclean heathen. Unclean,
still
I don't know.
Heathen.
Still a heathen, but yeah. At least he's yeah. A moderately uncouth. That's what I was going for. Not unclean, uncouth. Although, you know, Paul might look like a dirty hippie anyway.
Sometimes.
I'm a couth heathen.
Uncouth. I think today,
that's what I'm taking.
If I'm using that wrong, somebody can correct me. And then myself, Logan Daly. Hi, self. So we're here in my office, and we're going to record a little jabbering about our first sermon on the Book of Acts.
But first,
we need to, we need to go over Paul's shortcomings, which are basically anytime that he comes or goes anywhere because he is short. But all right. It doesn't work if you tap the microphone. My goodness.
Logan is here all day.
I'm here way too much, actually. So somebody save me. Let's go to lunch. All right. Paul's shortcomings this week. The sermon was actually wildly on time. 28 out of the allotted 30 minutes. So well done, Paul. Everybody cheer and clap. Yay! Go, Paul! You didn't say any naughty words in the sermon.
Is that a shortcoming?
I don't know. Some people might view it as such. So we're just, you know, we talked about it last week or we didn't talk about it last week. So I'm trying to think of shortcomings here. And I'm drawing a blank, to be honest, which makes me feel like I have failed. In that I did not pick apart any of your shortcomings this week.
You didn't take any notes on what I screwed up on?
No, I'm just, all I can remember is when I screwed up, like, changing the slide.
There's that.
But that's not your shortcoming. I could blame you and say, like, you didn't know how to read, but.
There was that awkward pause where I'm just standing there waiting for the next slide to come up.
Yeah, there was that. There was you talking about the speaker. So if you hear that, I couldn't edit that out.
You couldn't?
No. You trampled all over that. It was like a pack of elephants over a field, and you're like, I can't do anything with that. It just needs to sit there in all its glory.
So Logan's editing skills is lacking.
No. There was just nothing to be done for that. Mm. There was not enough. Mm. There was not enough. No. There was not worth
creativity. Apparently.
It was not worth the effort. It was an effort thing. Just was not. It was not. Worth the time.
Is it clear that I was talking about the speaker?
Yes, you did say the speaker.
Okay, good.
You said, and that was the only reason I'm like, it didn't, because you said, we have a speaker, we have a naughty speaker or something like that. Sometimes you have to smack it. I don't know. It was very awkward. But anyway, it was fine.
I'm always in awe of the way Paul can present a whole sermon without notes. But at the same time, you could derail him so easily.
Oh, yeah. Completely. The baby at the beginning, I also didn't edit that out because it was just funny. Like,
with Kate?
Yeah, where you're like, hi, everybody. And then, you just, baby. Depart to, talk about a baby that she brought up. And you're like, oh, it's cute.
She brought him right up to me.
It was pretty
what
funny.
Do I ignore the baby? Do I
have, like, you're like, what are you doing? Get back to your seat. Take that baby.
That's totally un-Jesus of me.
Take the children away from me. Something totally I don't know. Something like that. But there was that. Oh, there was one. You were pronouncing a name. Now that I think of it, there was one that you kept pronouncing a name weird. But I don't remember.
Not Theophilus.
But it might have been Theophilus. But it was. Is there like a Greek pronunciation of that?
Theophilus.
So he did talk about the Greek word and how that could be
Theosebes. To be clear,
I think you might have called him like Theophiles.
I may have.
Yeah, that's what it was. You kept saying Theophiles, and I'm like, is that right?
Theophiles.
I don't know.
Theo.
I think you like combined Theophily or Theophilus and Theosebes or whatever.
I may have.
Yeah. It every time you said it, I was like, that sounds very strange to me, but I don't know, so I can't.
That could have been.
It was fine.
I definitely was not all there Sunday, and by the end, I'm on a new medication that has been making my mouth dry.
Yeah, I did notice that.
And so, like, by the end of the sermon, I'm like, I felt like I had peanut butter in my mouth.
Delicious. All right. Yeah. Well, that's enough of that.
Communion with the cracker. That's always fun when you're
There's a trick to that. There's a trick. You eat it still, but you just tuck it next to your teeth, between your gums and your teeth, and then you go to your cup, and then after you're done praying, then you finish your cracker.
That works unless you're doing, like, I don't know, singing right after.
Well.
That doesn't work.
Then you just have to be more extreme.
You gotta
it doesn't feel very spiritual to me, but,
maximum
you know.
Maximum effort.
You just do a coin trick with the cracker and you just palm it.
That's even less spiritual.
I don't even know.
Like I'm still ingesting
spiritual,
it.
I agree with Paul. So the tongue in cheek method is the method, I guess.
Yikes.
How long have we been recording?
That was really funny. We've been 6 minutes now rambling about nothing. I'm so sorry, everyone.
All right, let's talk about
it's fine. Let's talk about
the book of John yet.
Yeah, we haven't even got to the book of John. My goodness. All right. So we're actually in the book of Acts, and we're going to start off. Let's talk about,
you know, John is going to come up. I just realized.
Of course it is. I knew it. It was too good to be true that we would have a quick sermon and a quick footnotes. But
I still think it'll be quick, depending on
what we wanted to bring up here was we wanted to talk about. Paul mentioned this on Sunday. Luke being a Gentile.
Oh, okay, yeah, okay. So this is clarification.
Luke being a Gentile, right?
Okay, yep. Where does that come from? I mentioned Colossians, so let's jump to Colossians. Chapter 4.
Colossians chapter 4. What a great chapter.
Paul's wrapping up his letter. He's saying goodbye to people. And then verse 10, he says, here's a bunch of names I'm not going to be able to pronounce. So
perfect.
Here we go. Aristarchus, my fellow prisoner, greets you. And Mark, the cousin of Barnabas, concerning whom you have received instructions. If he comes to you, welcome him. And Jesus, who is called Justice, because you can imagine having the name Jesus, but and being in a Christian church would be confusing.
That would be so intimidating. Yeah.
These are the only men of the circumcision among my fellow workers for the kingdom of God.
Mm.
Okay, so these are the only circumcised men.
Okay.
Some translations will just say, these are the only Jews among me.
That would make sense.
Yeah. And they have been a comfort to me. And then you can jump down to 14. Luke, the beloved loved physician, greets you. So, like, there's this list of people, and Paul starts off with this list of people who, well, in verse 10, these are the only Jews among me, the circumcised people among me.
Sure.
Then later, and Luke, the beloved physician, greets you.
So Luke's included, but not amongst the Jews.
Yeah.
On the list.
And there's a few other people listed there, too, that are not part of the circumcised. So that's interesting.
Curious.
Yeah, I hadn't noticed that before. I thought that was fantastic.
That makes sense, then.
You brought that up.
So over 25% of our New Testament's written by a Gentile. Yeah.
And that's cool.
That means that
could be more, depending on who wrote Hebrews.
That means that over 50% of it is written by a Jew, though.
Yeah. Yeah. Which means we still need.
We should probably understand that perspective too.
Yeah.
Yeah. No.
And Luke was probably converted by a Jew and taught by a Jew and raised in Jewish scriptures.
It would seem, because he does make plenty of references.
Tons.
So it would seem like he kind of knows his stuff.
Yeah.
Either way.
Which is why that the Isaiah 49:6 passage we referenced in the sermon, I think I got that reference right, is so important to Luke. Because he came to know the kingdom of God because of the fulfillment of that passage, that Israel would ultimately become a light to all nations, and that salvation would be shared with them all.
It'd be fun to be a fly on the wall for the early church and just see the different cultures come together, you know, Jews and Greeks, and the different Greek cultures and, you know, expectations and the church trying to figure that out. Like, that'd be a fun movie to watch.
Let's sit through that.
When I go to heaven, I'm going to ask for that.
That movie?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. I want that playback.
I hope the Russo brothers direct it.
Oh, that was funny. That was funny.
You're welcome.
Go and find the meaning of this. All right. Next topic. Tell me about Q-Source.
Yeah, how did this come up?
We were talking about this. Week. We were talking about this in Sermon Club. And we were talking about itself. Like how Luke's agenda and what he decides to include in the gospel, and then like what, like the timing of when it was written versus when Acts was written, and it came up in this, and somehow we got to talking about Q Source.
Okay. So I'm not an expert in Q Source. There is a debate amongst scholars, both conservative and liberal, however, whatever other label you want to use.
Is this spelled Q, like the letter Q?
Yes.
And then Source.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, you can pull it up on Wikipedia.
For those of you that want to look this up.
Yep. So when you look at the synoptic gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and they're called synoptic because synoptic means they look the same. So you have soon and optic, same looking,
sure.
You can say. They look very much similar. In fact, they share over 60% of their content together. Luke, for example, almost verbatim quotes passages from Mark and Matthew. Matthew almost verbatim quotes passages from Mark.
Sure.
At the same time, like, so the debate is, are they just using Mark as a kind of a standard reference point?
So they're starting from Mark and then they expand.
Sure.
From Mark, they add little bits and pieces.
Yep.
They're like, here, I'm going to make this, I'm going to tell this story too, or I'm going to add this in.
Yep.
I'm going to leave this out, etc.
But there's passages that Luke and Matthew share so much in common that they don't share with Mark.
Mm.
So now the question is where does Matthew and Luke get their content from?
Sure.
And so there's this hypothesis called the Q source, that there's this other earlier writing or source that Matthew and Mark and Luke are all pulling from. There's another version of this hypothesis called the two source hypothesis, that Mark and that Mark was used by both Luke and Matthew, but there's this other source called Q that Matthew and Luke also use. It's a big.
So instead of being a big game of telephone,
it's
Mark told the story first, and then maybe Matthew took Mark's gospel and was like, I'm going to add some stuff here and there. And
sure.
Like, I remember this, I'm going to add this in. Mm-hmm. Right. And then Luke took Matthew's and was like, I'm going to present it like this. Right. Big game of telephone. So as opposed to that, this Q source theory is that all three of them had this, maybe a compendium of writings, various writings, recording the teachings of Jesus, mm-hmm. that they were pulling from this original source to put their gospel together. Is that a fair summation?
It's a fair summation, yes.
Okay. For laymen that don't care.
Yeah.
If you're not a layman, if you're not lame, and that's a bad joke.
Or not a man.
Or not a man. Or a lay person. We're gonna be really politically correct here. If you're not a lay person, then you can go look this up and dig into it. It is kind of fascinating.
And for me, it's not controversial. Mm-hmm. When you write a book,
sure.
If you're not doing research and studying and looking at other sources, and
might be a lame book.
Yeah. My favorite books are the ones that half the book are footnotes in the back.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I love those.
My favorite are Dr. Seuss.
Oh, yeah, sure.
There's no footnotes in there.
No, I'm sorry. Because he's making it all up. But like your actual non-fictional works that are really doing the research.
Sure.
And like, that's what you want.
You want to see some biographical evidence, sure. Behind it.
Sure. And Luke is pretty clear on that. Like, he, for a long time, he says in the beginning of his gospel, he's been devoted to such issues. Mm-hmm. He's been collecting, he's been studying, he's been researching, he's been interviewing, and
just killing it as a historian.
Sure. And so if Mark, who's one of the earliest gospels, accurately recorded some of Jesus's teachings, then of course Luke's going to use that as his source rather than just coming up with his own.
Mm-hmm.
If there's this other source that we're unfamiliar with called the Q source that was apparently available to the early church, that was trusted by the apostles and trusted by the early church as an accurate recording of the works and teachings of Jesus, then I hope Luke used it.
Sure.
Does that mean that there is in fact a Q source that did exist? There is a debate. There is a case for and a case against.
Mm-hmm.
With that said,
does this mean that the Word of God is not inspired?
That's where
everything would go with this. The debate would come from.
No, it doesn't mean that. It means that the early gospel writers did their homework. That they took this job seriously and they fact checked.
Sure.
They tried to make sure that their account of the gospel, while yes, they had an agenda, yes, they had a reason and something they were trying to promote with what they were writing, they still took the time to make sure as best they could that it was accurate. And that God was involved in the writing and the recordings of these gospels. So.
Hmm.
When you read what Luke says at the beginning of his gospel account, how does that shape the way you read that gospel? Or does it?
My initial response is it doesn't.
Or what you know about Luke, like what kind of lens do you put on when you read the Luke's account versus John versus Mark versus Matthew? Like what kind of lens do you put on that's maybe different than the other gospels?
So I think Luke is attempting to be more of an ancient historian. And this isn't modern day historians, and we have to make sure we understand the differences. Like he's going to write a history, a collection of history things, but even ancient historians had an agenda and they were fine with it.
Sure.
They had to respect a specific viewpoint and they were going to back that up. They were going to use history to prove that. And so this is what Luke is doing. He is writing to a combination of Gentile and Jewish audience, trying to show how God's kingdom came through Jesus, through a Jewish Jesus, and how that kingdom was not meant to end in Israel, but meant to expand out into the rest of the world. So he is going to, of course, when he looks at his sources, when he chooses his stories and his teachings that he's going to focus on, of course, he's going to talk about like what we talked about today in Sermon Club, Luke 14 passage. Mm. Of course, he's going to look at stories about, I think of Lazarus and the rich man. Luke is the one that records the parable of the prodigal son.
Right.
Like he's going to include stories like that, where God is always looking for the outcast. He's always going to be a friend of sinners. He's always going to be working with women. Of course, Luke is include stories like that.
Yeah, like Matthew, but maybe in a different way. His experience, religious experience, is different than some of the other gospel writers.
Sure,
is what I'm hearing you say.
And especially if he's a Gentile.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as a Gentile. Yeah, coming into this. As an adopted son.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Yeah. This reminds me, going back to Q source, it reminds me of the idea, the theory that Luke was a synagogue parallel, that Luke wrote his gospel to go alongside of the weekly readings of the synagogue.
Mm.
I am not familiar with this theory.
Yeah.
I think you're the one that shared it with
me. Yeah, I got this from Marty. Marty's got a great episode in his Bema podcast that talks about this. And there's a book. Oh, no. What's it?
The Evangelist Calendar?
Yeah, it's called Evangelic something calendar. Is it Goddard? No, that's not Goddard. That's a counselor guy. Gottman? No.
Hold on.
We're looking it up. Buffering. This book is like super expensive though.
Because it's not in print anymore.
Because it's not in print anymore. It's hard to find. If you do find a copy of this, buy it.
If it's cheap.
If it's cheap. Like, I mean, or if you do find a copy of this and it's not cheap, but you find a copy, because cheap can be dependent upon your person. So if you find it.
Golder.
Golder. There it is. You want to spell that?
G-O-U-L-D-E-R.
G-O-U-L-D-E-R.
On Amazon to buy it used, it starts at $216.
Yeah, so if you find it for under $216, go ahead and shoot me a message.
Just buy it for you.
Or just buy it for, yeah, buy it for me so that I can hold it over Paul's head, literally over Paul's head, and he can jump for it and we can all make fun of him.
I'm a wrestler, remember?
I'm taller.
But if you're holding it above your head, your whole body and your legs are completely exposed.
Yeah, you can kick me in the shins. It's fine.
Double leg takedown, single leg takedown with an easy trip. Ankle
thing. Way fatter than you. I will fall on you and you will splat.
I know how to make you fall backwards.
Well, you could try.
I'm just saying.
This is going to be fun for everybody involved. Like I said, get the book. We'll hold it over his head and then who knows what's going to happen.
I could holding your heel with my shoulder against the front of your shin, little lever action, you will fall backwards.
Wow. We can try. We can try.
We're going to have a throw down in the middle of the church office.
It's going to be like the gigantic blob falling on Paul. That was a fat joke on me. Right.
So, anyway, Q-Source.
Could be a superhero reference there.
Straight up Thorbod. What?
So none of us in this room have read this book. It's a theory that I find intriguing, but I have no, I can't attest to it or.
Yeah. It makes sense that there are a lot of things that line up with the Jewish synagogue, like teachings, calendar, or something like that. It's absolutely fascinating. I don't want to give it like a terrible, like, I don't want to do a terrible job of explaining it, mm-hmm. but it is fascinating and you should definitely go research this because it's very cool.
Yep.
So that's the fodder that I have for you on that one.
All right. What else we got?
I think that's it. Unless you've got something else that you want to bring up.
I don't remember how clear I was about what we know. Did I explain okay Luke possibly living in Troas?
I have no recollection. Rob's face tells me he has no recollection.
No. Okay. So...
He looks like, yeah, I have no memory of this place.
So I'm just going to try to explain this again. And I mean...
Again?
Again.
Oh.
I said it in the sermon.
Are you sure?
I did.
I listened to it twice.
If we record this twice, we may be shocked twice.
I said, we think he lived in Troas, which was in the northwestern corner of Turkey, modern day Turkey.
Okay.
Right where Turkey and Macedonia would meet.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You talked about this.
Okay. The reason that we think that... is because of the we statements. When you read Acts, Luke will record in third person, they, them, Paul, whatever. And then when Paul gets to Troas, all of a sudden the language changes to we.
Oh. First person plural. This is why pronouns are important.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so we think he was possibly living in Troas. Now, however, there is a... like an introductory text to the Gospel of Luke that we have from... about 100 years later, that talks about Luke of Antioch.
Yeah.
And so we're not sure if he lived in Antioch, if he lived in Troas, maybe... Did he move? Mm. Maybe he did live in Antioch and then met up with Paul later at Troas.
Okay.
But yeah, the we statements becomes some of the most important things to pay attention to as far as when Luke joins the story and when he disappears from the story. But from Troas to Philippi, he's with Paul. And then when Paul comes back through Philippi, through the rest of the book of Acts, Luke is with Paul.
Curious.
Which means he's on the boat wreck at Malta.
Ooh.
Yeah. He got to experience that one firsthand.
Twisty.
Anyway, I don't know if I explained that clearly in the sermon, but I thought it'd be good just to try.
I'm going to go with no, because I didn't remember it. Until
it doesn't necessarily mean that.
Well, you know,
I thought now that you reminded me of what you talked about, because when you just said the word, I didn't know what the word even meant.
Yeah,
it's like what? Oh, that's a town. But yeah, I thought you were clear on Sunday. But that is interesting, and it's interesting to pick up on those patterns of we and they, or we and I, or
Funny thing.
I am he and he are we, and we are all together. Yeah. Something about the walrus. This is a Beatles reference again.
I'm going to ignore that. What I find interesting is if he lived in Troas and he was a physician. Yeah, we think of physician as what we think of our modern day hospitals and doctors.
Sure. That's not, white coat.
Sure. It's not the same
stethoscope.
Or like a witch doctor.
I'm curious if before he came to Christ, if he worked in a Asclepios.
Oh.
If he worked in a pagan temple of healing.
That is
I'm curious about that. I'm also curious.
That's a theory.
He's still called a physician after he comes to Christ. So,
sure.
Like,
did he keep working there?
He obviously was still a physician, which, by the way, means that Paul commends him for it.
Yeah.
He's a beloved physician.
Sure.
Which obviously means he kept doing physician work. He was still a doctor after he came to Christ, which means it's okay to get medicine and get help. It is not an expression of a lack of faith.
Vaccinate your kids.
Hashtag we went there.
You totally went there.
Oh.
Oh, man.
That's for Joe.
Well, and that's a service, you know, that's a service kind of industry. And, of course, you know, the history of it is mixed with both strangeness.
Sure.
You know, some strange theories over the centuries, but also, you know, people have needed physicians, you know, from day one. Like we've needed to care for people who are sick, and there are elements and properties available to us that help.
Whether it's your mom with chicken noodle soup, or it's somebody that spent way too much money going to school, we need somebody to take care of you.
Anyway, I just...
There you go. Okay, that is a good point. I like that.
Just interesting speculation. I mean, like I said, even 200 years ago, medical advice was ridiculous. Like, bloodletting was still a thing.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, the bloodletting thing.
Oh, you have the plague. Okay, we're going to bleed you dry, and that will make you feel better. Oh, look, you died.
You know, you don't have the plague anymore.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
It killed the virus.
You know, your body still has a plague, and now the rats, they're going to eat your body and nibble on you, are going to get it, and the fleas will then get it, and then those fleas will jump off onto your...
Seems like a great idea.
Yeah, yeah. But anyway, no.
If they would have let the blood out faster from all the infected and then just, like, gotten rid of the bodies, then you wouldn't have had the plague.
If they would have just buried or burned the bodies, it would have helped tremendously.
Yeah, that would have probably helped.
Yeah. Also, if they didn't throw out their crap into the middle of the street.
What?
Yeah.
Sanitization?
Yeah.
That's crazy talk.
Anyway, well, that's all I got for...
It
was a short sermon this week. Not tons to dig into.
It was an intro. It was an intro into Acts. So, I mean, you know, the rest of Acts, we've got plenty to dig into. Because now we're going to try to fit like 40 chapters of Acts or something like that. How many chapters does Acts have?
It's not 40,
but... No.
26?
Yeah, I think 26. That's right.
Okay. 26. It was close. 40, 26. It's practically the same number.
Over the hill. Yeah.
It's practically the same number.
Sure.
So we're going to fit all of those 26 into like 8 weeks.
9 weeks now.
Yeah. 9 weeks now, yeah.
Which means like the missionary journeys are all one week.
We going to move quick.
We got one chapter this week, one chapter the next week. And then we move quick.
And then so hang on tight. Hang on tight. We about to sprint.
Yeah.
Buckle up, buttercup.
So yeah, there you go. Well, thanks for joining us on another episode of Footnotes. And we'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Footnotes on the Mission Ridge podcast. For more information about Mission Ridge, please visit our website at missionridge.church. Thanks for tuning in. We hope the rest of your week is straight up hashtag blessed, and that you'll join us again next week for more footnotes.